Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
From MotoWeek.net, it's the MotoWeek Podcast with your host, Wilson.
Well, hello and welcome to MotoWeek. My name is Wilson. Thank you so much for listening to the only MotoGP show on the internet that thinks going on vacation is actually more stressful than regular life. Well, for me, it was, at least when it came to actually getting back home. I had a canceled flight, a delayed flight that made me miss another connection, and then I finally had to fly to a different airport altogether. I had to fly to Los Angeles and then drive back home without my bags, which took 2 days to catch up to me. So what I'm saying is that I am really glad to be back here where I might not be in some faraway tourist spot, but I can talk MotoGP with you, which is kind of like a vacation. Well, for me it is. Even though it is a day later than I planned to do the show, and I apologize for that. I am especially jazzed, though, to be talking about this particular race, because for the first time since 2019, we are headed to one of the absolute best circuits in the world for wheel-to-wheel action, the fast and flowing Phillip Island Circuit on Australia's spectacular southern coast near Melbourne. Now, not only do we get to go back racing at an epic track, but we're doing it at a critical time of the season, with 2 points separating the top two riders and only 20 points across the top three. And that makes this race big, really big. In fact, in a few moments, I'm going to argue why I think the entire MotoGP championship may hinge on this race. And of course, we'll talk about a whole bunch of other stuff as well, including the circuit, the favorites for this weekend, the championship contenders, my watch list, and then I'll finish things up by telling you who I think will win Sunday afternoon. Although, if I'm being honest, I haven't really decided myself who I'm going to pick yet. So it'll be just as much of a surprise for me as it is for you in the end. So I have a reason to listen to the end of the show as well. So let's kick off our full preview of round 18 of the 2022 MotoGP World Championship, the Australian GP at the Phillip Island Circuit. But before we start, I would like to take a moment to invite you over to the website if you have not checked it out yet. You can get all of the latest episodes whenever you want at MotoWeek.net. You can follow on Twitter at MotoWeek and on Instagram at MotoWeekUSA. And leave those comments. It's been a while since we've done a comment show, and that is entirely my fault. But I do have a couple on the way, so make sure you get your comment in. Let me know what you want to talk about. You can do that on Facebook at facebook.com/MotoWeek.net. And then over on the Reddit sub at r/MotoWeek. And if you do want to support the program, you can do that on Patreon at patreon.com/MotoWeek. All right, so here we go. Next up is the rundown. This is the list of everything we're going to talk about on this episode of the show, which is dedicated entirely to Phillip Island as MotoGP heads back down under. We'll talk about the circuit and what makes this fast-flowing track so awesome for racing action. Talk about the favorites, the riders who I think have the best chance to compete for a podium, and we will, during that conversation, be talking about all three championship contenders. We'll move on to my watch list from there, a couple of riders who might surprise this weekend, before, finally, I have to figure something out when it comes to making picks. And honestly, I can't guarantee these picks are going to be very good, even though we already do have the free practice one results with Joan Zarco leading the way. I don't really put much stock in FP1, so it's not going to help me out a whole lot. But I will give you my top five predictions for the Australian GP. All right, so Phillip Island. I'm so excited we're back here. It's so awesome that MotoGP is back in Australia. And it's also great that this race arrives at this particular time of the season, with the championship closer than ever, with a trio of riders that are moving in kind of different directions right now, and most importantly, none of those title contenders have a MotoGP podium at this track. And that is why I think this race is so critical for the championship. Next week, we have Sepang. That's high speed, stop and go. It should favor Ducati. The season finale is in Valencia. That's very tight and technical, and that should favor Yamaha. Now, of course, Aprilia is a bit of an unknown in all of this, and so I consider them to be kind of somewhere in the middle. But when you take a look past Phillip Island at these final two tracks, you've got one where you would expect Pecco Bagnaia would do better and score more points, and one where you would expect that Fabio Quartararo would do better and score more points. But this one at Phillip Island, where all three championship challengers, like I said, don't have wins or even podiums here, Phillip Island is the closest thing to neutral ground of these final three races. Yes, Honda and Yamaha especially have better results here, but we've seen so many back and forth battles between all of the big three, along with Suzuki thrown in as well. So if everything goes to plan from here on out, Ducati scores more in Malaysia, Yamaha tallies up more in the season finale, then that means that whoever can figure this track out the quickest, whoever can step up and score the unexpected points in this race, where things are much more level coming in, that rider could very well take the advantage in the title race. And in retrospect, after we get to the end of the season, we very likely could look back on this race and see it as the ultimate decider in what happens in this championship. In my opinion, of course. I'm not building this up too much, am I? I mean, I'm not trying to oversell it, but I'm super psyched about this weekend because there is so much riding on this race. There is huge potential for championship drama, but this track also has huge potential for action between a number of riders going far beyond those top three in the championship. Why? Well, let's talk about the very unique track that is Phillip Island. And you know what I'm going to say here, because I've already said it a couple of times. The words fast and flowing are used so much in conjunction with Phillip Island that it's almost kind of become a cliche. But it's with good reason that those terms are so inextricably linked with this place, because more than any other circuit, it really defines the category for those two terms. Although I'd also throw in Destroyer of Edge Grip as another kind of sub-descriptor of the track with those big high-speed turns. But Phillip Island accomplishes its appointed task of being fast and flowing without so much as a thought to the characteristics of other tracks on the schedule. There is no stop and go here, and there are no terribly technical sections either, outside of maybe MG Corner and, of course, avoiding seagulls if you're Andre Iannone. But there are only really a couple of hard braking zones here. And that's what makes Phillip Island so unique. It doesn't try to be all things to all riders. It doesn't try to balance its challenges. It is very single-minded, but in a spectacular way. I mean, showing off big speeds and long sweeping corners and plenty of opportunities to show off just how fast you are here, and also in a couple of places, how brave you are as well. And as such, this track really has been a bit of a wild card and an equalizer. I mean, that neutral ground that I referred to earlier when it comes to success, because the bigger speeds cater to the horsepower bikes. But when you're not on that big front stretch, the bikes spend so much time on the edge here that momentum and grip and rear traction, tire management, all of those things become equally as important as how fast you can go in a straight line. So it's no surprise that we've had five different winners here in the last 7 years leading up to the COVID break. And during that span, Marc Marquez was the only repeat offender. And we've seen 10 different riders during that time on the podium. Now, that being said, Honda and Yamaha have really led the way here during the Marquez era, so since 2013. And that makes sense with all of the high-speed corners here. But Ducati has really come along in the handling department recently. Although back in the day, Casey Stoner seemed to have no problem winning at this track on a Ducati or a Honda. But, you know, it's his home track, and he probably could have won here on a Vespa, for that matter. But this entire track, this entire place, is fantastic. It's so much fun. I would love to have a go at this circuit, although I would be minutes slower than any of those MotoGP riders. But I do have three favorite places on the track, starting with Turn 1. It's not only a very popular place to pass, but it's where you get to show off just how brave you are. You slingshot out of the final turn onto that 200-plus mile-per-hour front stretch, and at that point, Turn 1 is really like a roller coaster. The track is dropping away from you as it heads to the right, but even though you're going so fast coming in, you're not really braking all that hard. I mean, Turn 1 is still about 120, 125 miles an hour, so it becomes really a competition to see who can break the latest into that corner. And I would imagine that's far more exciting for the riders than it is even for us watching, because obviously we'll get to see guys side by side going into that corner. But for them, I'm sure there are a couple of pucker moments hoping that the bike is going to slow down as much as you need it to get it leaned over and not to make a mistake. So Turn 1 is a fantastic corner here. The next place that I wouldn't have to want to race these guys in real life is Turn 4, Honda Corner. Probably the best place to pass at Phillip Island. It's yet another game of chicken on the brakes. You're carrying a ton of speed in from Turn 3, headed to the hardest braking point on the track. And not only is it great for passing, but it's also a really easy place to make a mistake. Kind of similar to the top of the hill at the Red Bull Ring, whatever that turn is now, 3, 4, something like that. But we will see some riders making mistakes in the Turn 3. And then, of course, you can't leave out the drop from Lukey Heights into Turn 10, MG Corner. That is a crazy section. It's hard to describe even. A blind, slightly off-camber right-hander that crests immediately into a hard-braking zone and then the tightest corner on the track. Not only is it a place that's perfect for making a surprise pass, but it also lines you up for that never-ending left-hand run back to the front stretch. So it's very important not only to get through there cleanly, but also to carry as much momentum as possible so you can use that big series of left-handed corners to slingshot you right back onto the front stretch. So you take all of that, you frame it with the ocean as a backdrop, along with some rabid Aussie fans cheering on hometown favorite Jack Miller, and you've got the setting for a spectacular race. And again, I'm not trying to oversell the track. I know I've already said that this could be the deciding race of the year and then basically describe the track like it's motorcycle heaven. But stick with me here. I just want you to get as excited as I am about the race. So that's where they're going to be racing. I'm already this stoked, and we haven't even talked about any riders yet. So let's move on to the riders, starting with the contenders. And these are the guys that I think have the best chance of finishing on the podium. And in what could be a very intense battle Sunday, if one of these guys has the ability to step up, they could easily win the whole thing. And like I said earlier, we are going to talk about all three championship contenders in this category. And we're going to start with the rider leading the points right now, who really has so many questions coming into this one, Fabio Quartararo. And let's face it, the defending champ is in a very tenuous place coming into this round. His entire championship lead has now eroded down to a scant 2 points on the heels of one of his worst rides ever in MotoGP a couple of weeks back in Thailand. That inexplicable performance left both Fabio and Yamaha scratching their heads. In fact, Fabio didn't talk to the media at all after the race and all the way up until this weekend, the press conference yesterday in Australia. And, you know, he apologized to the media for not talking after the race and not communicating with them at all in between then and now. I don't think he has to do that. I don't think that's necessary at all. I mean, yeah, that does kind of speak to the level of pressure that he's feeling right now, but that level of pressure is understandable. And so I don't think any athlete, I mean, eventually they do have to talk to the media, because by talking to the media, that's their primary way of communicating with the fans, and the fans make the sport go. So yes, every rider, I think, has media obligations. But in a situation like this, it's not like Fabio said, no, I'm not going to talk to you guys. Screw you. I'm out of here. He just walked away, went to his place, kind of got himself refocused again and then came back to Phillip Island. And I don't think there's any need for an apology at all. Now, my perspective might be a little bit different because I'm not a professional journalist, and if Fabio doesn't talk to me, it doesn't mean I don't have an article and can't get paid or whatever. But I think everybody understands the situation that he's in, whether they might want to admit it or not. So, yeah, I don't think he has anything to feel bad about by not talking to the press. But obviously, those guys had to take some time to regroup and come back at it. And while Phillip Island doesn't provide the ideal backdrop for a comeback performance, Quattraro certainly could do a lot worse than coming to this track when he needs to have a good day. But that's more manufacturer-based than Fabio-based, because it hasn't really been a great track for him in general during his entire GP career. But Fabio's only MotoGP race here was slightly better than he ran in the lower classes. He started second, but ended up completing only two corners in the race in a really, really weird incident. I don't know if you remember this one. Quattraro made a small mistake running wide into turn two, and that just happened to put him in like the perfect position to be knocked over and into the gravel by a flying Danilo Petrucci. And I literally mean a flying Danilo. He high-sided off the bike and his legs came around, hit Fabio, and that knocked him off track. But even without that wreck, he had already kind of put himself in a hole with that mistake. He looked like he was going to be seventh, sixth, or seventh in line, and it was going to be pretty hard at that point to make his way back up through the field. But qualifying in that 2019 race showed that he did have speed here. And that was on the Petronas satellite bike too, so not the best equipment that Yamaha had to offer at that point. But the more encouraging thing for Fabio, I think, is Yamaha's performance as a whole at this track. That provides at least some reason for him to be optimistic. Because in the last seven Australian GPs, the M1 has scored three victories and nine podiums. And if you do the math there, that's 43% of the podiums up for grabs. Now, of course, that success kind of waned a little bit the last few times around here, with Maverick Vinales' 2018 victory, the only Yamaha podium in the last two Australian rounds. And compounding that kind of problem, their spots were taken by Ducati. Ducati slowly crept in 2018 and 2019, looked stronger, and took home a couple of trophies. So this is going to be a challenge for Fabio on multiple levels. I mean, in addition to this not being his strongest track and Yamaha not quite being the force here they once were, he's also coming into this race not just off of that debacle in Thailand, but he's only got one podium in the last seven races coming in, which again, I'm sure is part of the reason that we really didn't hear anything out of him from Buriram all the way up until Phillip Island. But he shows up here, sits down, says, "Hey guys, I cleared my head out. Sorry about that. I'm back in the mix here." That doesn't mean the pressure has gone away. It will absolutely be on for this race. And not just for Fabio Quartararo, but primarily for Fabio Quartararo. And that pressure will be very, very different than a year ago, where, yes, Pecco Bagnaia was surging, but Fabio had a healthy point cushion that he could lean on. And he nursed that point cushion all the way to the championship. So with this being so much closer and everything being so much more intense, not just with Pecco, but with Aleix Espargaró as well, who's closer than even Pecco was a year ago, we're going to really get to see how Fabio handles this pressure and how he handles it coming in off a bad race. Now, I don't think he's going to have another race like Thailand at all for the rest of the year. So he's going to be better this weekend. How much better? I'm not sure, and FP1 didn't really tell us a whole lot when it came to that, but he is going to be hyper-motivated, and if he and the bike mesh at this track, he's going to be in the mix. Now, Pecco Bagnaia, of course, is in an entirely different place than Fabio right now. He had his version of a lackluster race, you could argue, in Buriram, and he still walked away with third-place points, a trophy, and the title race closer than it's been all year long. So, you know, he didn't have the result that he really wanted coming into this race. But unlike Fabio, who walked away with 0 points, Pecco, in his less-than-expectations performance, nearly completed his appointed Ducati mission of catching Fabio Quartararo in the points. Now, you could argue that finishing at the back of the podium in Thailand, and on top of that, making that mistake in the Japanese GP, that Bagnaia maybe has lost a little bit of momentum, because he definitely did cost himself the championship lead coming out of the last round. But I don't see it that way. I think that all of the aforementioned pressure on Fabio Quartararo really comes exclusively, or almost exclusively, from Bagnaia's corner. You know, it may not feel like it right now because of the ill-timed move in Japan and then not going out and dominating in Thailand, but Pecco is still on a searing hot streak that includes 6 wins and 8 podiums in the 12 rounds since Jerez. And a lot of the non-point scoring races in that span, he showed us just as impressive speed as in those victories. But now that he's finally made his way within real striking distance of his Yamaha rival, I think the game has changed a little bit. I think the mentality may have changed a little bit, and we'll get to see how Pecco responds. Can he keep the pressure on this weekend? Or does kind of the relief of reaching his first goal, and a major goal too, considering how far behind he was, does reaching the top of that difficult mountain cause him to relax just enough that the door opens once again for Fabio, or maybe even Aleix, to sneak through? That's a danger. I mean, a lot of times we reach a bit of an emotional plateau having gotten past a big goal, right? And that can slow the progress to the next one. But there are only 3 rounds left, so there is no time for Pecco to kind of relax and say, man, wow, look at this. I did it. I came all the way back. I'm in the mix. Because if he blinks, everybody's going to pass him by again. So where Fabio's challenge this weekend is how he handles the pressure, Bagnaia's challenge is, can he keep the pressure on? Now, he has more momentum working in his favor coming into this race than Fabio does, that's for sure. Because in addition to those 2022 stats I just mentioned, in Pecco's only MotoGP race at Phillip Island, he was great. He finished 4th after starting all the way back in 15th. And that was far and away the best result of an incredibly rough rookie season in the Premier class. And that 4th was also indicative at the time of the direction Ducati as a whole was moving in respect to Phillip Island. After being kind of an outlier in the podium spots, the Desmos really started to make progress in 2018 and then in 2019, with a pair of podiums in the former, and then a 3rd along with Pecco's 4th in the latter of those two. So you put all that together, and I still wouldn't hand Pecco the outright advantage, but he should be feeling pretty confident about his chances. So in what very well may be a wild race, Bagnaia should absolutely be in the podium mix. And he will be just as motivated as Fabio, because he knows that there's so much on the line. If he can take the title lead here, he'll be riding a huge wave of momentum into a very Ducati-focused Sepang. That 1-2 combo may be enough to put him over the top. So big pressure, lots and lots riding on this one for both Fabio and Pecco. But let's not leave out Aleix Espargaró, because at a wildcard track, Aleix happens to be the consummate wildcard rider. I mean, with all of the buzz surrounding Fabio and Pecco, it's very easy to forget that Aleix is still very much in this championship battle. But the elder Espargaró does get lost a bit in the shuffle, mostly because he hasn't looked that confident the past couple of races. There were the issues at Motegi, and then a very mediocre race in Buriram weren't really momentum builders. Now, they also didn't hurt him very much overall in the points. He's closer now than he was coming out of Japan. But he did miss a big pair of opportunities to make up ground. I mean, he could be almost as close as Pecco right now in terms of points. And on top of that, he hasn't really been instilling that confidence that he can go out there and compete for a podium, you know, that we all witnessed in the middle part of the season. It's not gone, but it's also not there at the same time. So this is the race. Now is the time for everybody, especially Aleix Espargaró, to step up and stake his claim. And, you know, the one thing that Aleix really has going for him over the other two main contenders at this track, which, like I said, is more of a level playing field than the two that are coming up later, is experience. Espargaró has a lot more MotoGP time under his belt at this track than those first two riders we've discussed. And he's had some moderate success here, all things considered. Landed 10th in the last running of the Australian GP in 2019. That was his third best finish of that season on the Aprilia. And then he was 9th on the RSGP in 2018. That was tied for his second best finish of that season on the same bike. He was also 9th in his first season on the Suzuki. And even in those last two races, 2018 and 2019, he may not have been well inside the top 10, but he wasn't riding a well inside the top 10 bike, let's be perfectly honest. But even with that, Phillip Island was his best race of the flyaways. Now he has a much better bike. He has a bike capable of being on the podium. And he's going to a track that he obviously feels more comfortable at than the other ones that are surrounding it in those flyaway rounds. And, you know, every bit of momentum helps. And if the racing is as intense as it was the last few times we raced here, that little extra bit of confidence and a lot of extra experience could help Espargaró sneak past his main rivals. So I wouldn't count him out at all to be a contender in this race. So those are our three championship rivals heading into this one. There are two more riders on my favorites list for this week, starting with Jack Miller. I mean, we got to have Jack Miller, right? And believe it or not, he's the first rider so far on this favorites list that actually has scored a podium here. Finally achieving his dream of a home MotoGP podium in the last Premier Class race that was run here before COVID hit. And now he finally gets to make his Australian return. I know he's been really, really waiting on this, and it couldn't come at a better time. I mean, Jack is riding right now as well, or in my opinion, better than he ever has in his MotoGP career, with 5 podiums in the last 8 rounds. And he comes into this one directly on the heels of fantastic performances in each of the first 2 flyaways, with the win in Japan and then the runner-up in Thailand. And remember, he's not completely out of title contention either. Although I will say it's really close to being out of reach. Sorry, Jack fans. 40 points in 3 races is really, really difficult. I mean, when you take a step back and you look at those numbers kind of realistically, what Jack needs to essentially do is make up 15 points in each of the next 2 races over Fabio Quartararo. That's hard enough. And then even if he were able to accomplish that, he'd also have to hope that Pecco and Aleix and Andrea Bastianini all lose points to him in the next 2 races as well. So you can see why it's really, really close to being out of reach. But the thing about this race is I don't think that Jack cares about that. He's not going to be racing with the championship in mind at all this weekend. He'll be racing for one thing and one thing alone: the fans. I mean, this week is going to be a Jack celebration. It's his official Ducati going away party in front of his home fans. And let's face it, we don't know what's going to happen when he gets to KTM. He doesn't know what's going to happen when he gets to KTM. He doesn't know if by the time he comes back a year from now, if he's still going to be a podium rider on a podium bike or not. And so having a bike that he knows can go out and win this race, that's all he's going to be focused on. And that makes him even more dangerous to the rest of the field, because he doesn't have to and he won't be playing it safe. He'll have literally nothing to lose and everything to gain by going full send to get on the podium and maybe even try to get on the top of the podium. There's no question he's going to be loving life this weekend. He's going to be super relaxed, ultra motivated, and the way that he's been racing, Jack Miller is a major podium threat on Sunday. All right, so the last rider on my favorites list, and I debated back and forth between the guy we're about to talk about and the first rider on my watch list, but ultimately I decided to go with Marc Márquez. And that may be a little bit of a debatable choice here, but I think he's in a really good spot to turn in an excellent result, and I'll tell you why I think that. Let's start with his past results here. Mark is going to line up as the most successful MotoGP rider on the grid Sunday. He has three podiums here. Believe it or not, there are actually two other riders in the race that have three career podiums. But the thing about Mark's is that all three of those podiums have been victories. And since I mentioned that there were two other riders with three podiums at Phillip Island on the grid this weekend, at least a couple of you are wondering, hey, wait a minute, you can't say that without telling us who the riders are. Who are they? Well, Cal Crutchlow is one, and the other rider we'll talk about next, so you'll have to wait a moment. That's called the tease. All right, so back to Mark Marquez. If you are a bit superstitious about your numbers, then you may be interested to know that all of Mark's Australian GP victories have come in odd number years. And of course, we're currently in an even number year. So maybe that makes you think he has no chance to win. Personally, I don't think that matters a whole lot. I'm more interested in what kind of results he has overall, and three victories definitely puts him on my radar to be a favorite for this weekend. The second thing that I'm looking at when it comes to Mark, his recent results since coming back. They haven't been spectacular, but after the return at Aragon, Mark finished fourth at Motegi and fifth in Buriram. The first of those finishes coming at an intensely physical track in Japan, and the second at the end of a triple header that saw the entire series travel halfway across the world. Mark hadn't raced in months, and then he gets back on the bike, does three in a row at physically difficult tracks, and the second of those finishes was a fourth, and the third of those finishes was still a top five. So for Mark to be able to return to a triple header and turn in that level of success, I think bodes really well. And he's already turning in better performances now than his previous returns from injury. So obviously, even though the arm is still bothering him, he's overall in much better shape, in a much better place when it comes to the physical condition or the potential after that arm surgery. So now Mark enters this race having had a week to recover and at a track where the smooth flowing nature really should be quite a bit less stressful than the hard braking, hard accelerating that we had in the previous two circuits. So because of all of that, previous results, what he's done since he's come back, and then the fact that this track shouldn't be as physically demanding on his arm, not only do I expect this race to be easier for him, but I also think that in turn increases his chances at a place where he's already had excellent results already. And so that for me gave Mark the nod, and he ended up being the rider to round out the favorites. So that takes care of that list for this weekend's race. Now we move on to my watch list. And this is a group of riders that maybe you thought of for this one, maybe you didn't think of, but they could still have a good day. Some of them might surprise quite a bit and compete for the back of the top five, or maybe even get into podium contention. And the first rider that I'm going to talk about here, Maverick Viñales. I already mentioned Mark Marquez and Cal Crutchlow, but the other rider on the grid Sunday with three Australian GP podiums is Top Gun. Like Mark, and Cal for that matter, he is a past winner here, having taken the top step of the podium in 2018, and he did that after finishing third the two previous seasons, one on the M1, the other on his final season on a Suzuki. So now he's looking to get on the box at the Australian GP with a third manufacturer, something he's only been able to do once so far at Silverstone. But I do like his chances here, even though I didn't end up putting him on the favorites list. The kicker for me and the deciding factor between Mark and Maverick is not only the three wins for Mark, which obviously carries a lot of weight, but also the fact that Mark has been very strong the last two races, where Maverick, on the other hand, has failed to finish higher than seventh in four of the last five rounds. So that's left me a little bit apprehensive on his performance potential, even if he is feeling a lot more confident now on the RSGP than he was at the beginning of the season. And I would argue that he's been racing better in situations where the bike hasn't been perfect or where the conditions haven't been perfect around him. I mean, we talked about this so many times before with him on a Yamaha. If like the stars weren't aligned, then you didn't get a good performance out of Maverick. That's not happening as much now. And in conjunction with that, and I don't want to do the whole commentator's curse here, but I'm not a commentator, so I guess I can't. Maverick has been avoiding those traditional Vinales starts. And that's why, even though he hasn't been finishing in the top five, he also hasn't been finishing way outside of the top 10 either. So there is potential there, more than enough for me to want to keep an eye on him very closely this weekend. But I am a bit cautious about his ceiling here. Qualifying is going to be a big factor in this one. The higher he starts, obviously, the better his chances. Next up on the list is Johann Zarco. And I made this list before FP1, so I didn't know he was going to lead the session. To be fair about Zarco, I have been right about the fact that he's pretty much a first half rider, at least when it comes to podiums and trophies. I thought that he was going to break out of that this season, but guess what? His last podium this year came in round 10. Exactly the halfway point. There haven't been any since. But that being said, he has generally been fast in the second half, if you know, a measure more inconsistent. So I don't think the potential is gone for him to get back on the podium again between now and the end of the season. When it comes to Australia, Zarco finished fourth here in 2017, although that was on the satellite Yamaha, which was really good here at this point, that bike. And a year later, he qualified on the front row. Since leaving Yamaha, well, John really hasn't had a real chance to reestablish himself at Phillip Island. But it's that overall speed this season, and the speed he's carried into the second half as well, that I'm much more interested in than his history here. That plus the fact that Ducati promises to be a bit better here than they have been in the past with a much better handling bike, that makes me think that a lot of Ducati riders, including Zarco, have a shot at a good finish. And that continues on to the next rider on my watch list, and Jorge Martin. All things considered, I think that Martin has done relatively well since losing out in that competition for the second factory Ducati ride. He's got a podium and he hasn't finished outside the top 10 since that announcement was made. And the last time that Martin raced here, he landed second on the podium. Now, that was in Moto2, and obviously he hasn't raced here in MotoGP experience, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. But he also has a Moto3 podium as well at Phillip Island. So even without any Premier Class experience, it's clear that Jorge knows his way around this track. Now, given that he ran well this season at both Catalunya and Silverstone, which have a more flowing layout, maybe not as much as Phillip Island, but definitely in that same genre, along with Ducati running well here their last few times out in 2018 and 19, and now having a much better bike, like I was just mentioning with Zarco, I think that Jorge does have an opportunity to run relatively well here. Now, there is one more Ducati rider that I want to talk about heading into this race, but before we get to him on the watch list, let's talk about Brad Binder. And Brad is in a tough position here, as far as I'm concerned, because he has a spectacular history at Phillip Island, but none of that history has come in the Premier Class. Brad was on a legitimate hot streak in Australia up until the point where racing was halted for COVID. In the last five races down under, Brad has a win and a third in Moto3, and then more recently in Moto2, a second and then back-to-back wins before everything got shut down. That's a lot of success in one place. So much so that even more than Jorge Martin that I just talked about, I think that that makes up for some lack of experience in MotoGP here, having never run a race in the Premier Class, because he's obviously so comfortable at this track that there are less obstacles, I think, in his way to having a good weekend. Now, coming in, yes, Thailand was not that great for Binder, but the race before that, of course, was the second in the Japanese GP. Admittedly, far different from where we're racing at Phillip Island, but when you're on a KTM any good performance, any result is going to be momentum. And I think that that gives Brad a little bit of encouragement heading into a track where he obviously feels like he's at home. If Brad can manage a good start and then channel some of that past success, when I say good start, I mean a good slot on the grid, he could be a really solid sleeper pick in this race and in your fantasy league if you're looking for somebody. But trust me, don't take my advice for your fantasy team. And then the final rider on my watch list for this weekend's race, yes, like I said before, is another Ducati rider, Enea Bastianini. And yes, obviously he's had a great year. He's doing well in the points, but he does find himself in an interesting position coming into this race. Enea obviously hasn't run a MotoGP race in Australia. And even in the lower series, it hasn't been a terribly kind track to him outside of a lone top five finish in Moto3 back in 2017. So unlike a guy like Binder, who has a stellar history coming into this one, but isn't running so well this year in terms of wins and podiums, Bastianini's in the opposite situation. Not necessarily his type of track, but he obviously has a lot of results this year. Of course, those results have to be tempered a little bit because after the back-to-back podium and win in Misano and Aragon, Bestia has kind of been less than spectacular the last few races. You do have to respect his potential for speed, though, and at a high-speed track like Phillip Island, I imagine that he's going to be able to do better than what he's done in the past, although it is still difficult to decide how high up the running order he's going to end up landing. But I find him a very interesting rider heading into this weekend because it's going to be a new experience at a style of track where he hasn't done a whole lot before, and he's going to have to figure out ways to master this kind of track to be a successful factory Ducati rider and compete for a championship. So because of that, I'm definitely interested in how he does, and he's going to be on my watch list. So that means that I have now stalled long enough, and we have reached the point in the program where I gotta put up or shut up and give you my picks for this race. And I'm gonna go back toward the beginning of the season, where we had so many riders that were capable of getting on the podium and winning a race, and so many unanswered questions. I kind of feel like we're back to that point only because of the track we're running at, the unique layout and nature of it, the fact that we haven't been here in so many years, and that there are some big name riders, some very successful riders this year, who have never even raced a premier class event here, or have only raced one when they were rookies, right? And in fact, two of the top three contenders are in that category. They've raced one time here on a MotoGP bike as rookies. And you can't really draw any parallels between those particular performances and where they're at right now as riders and what they've got right now in terms of machinery. And that makes this race incredibly difficult to handicap and incredibly difficult to pick. But I'm going to give it a go, and I've got some notes here, and I might shuffle a couple of these people around given the conversation that we just had and going through all the stats and kind of talking through all of these different riders. But one way or the other, let's get at it. Here are my top five picks for this weekend's Australian GP at Phillip Island. In fifth, I'm going to go Aleix Espargaró. Experience definitely goes a long way for him here, but he's not quite on his game as much right now as he was, say, a couple of months ago. There is an opportunity here for him to sneak up on both of the riders in front of him in the standings, but I'm going to play it safe and say that he fights his way into a solid top five finish. So I'm going Aleix fifth. In fourth, Marc Márquez. He's already better off right now, in my opinion, than he was earlier in the season. Now he's rested. He's at a track that should be easier for him to manage physically. I don't know. This could be a bit of a breakthrough race for him. I might actually be a little bit low picking him just off the podium, especially considering that I'm aiming a little bit high for the rider that I think I'm going to put in front of him now on the podium. In third, I'm going Fabio Quartararo. And yes, Fabio is definitely not in his happy place right now, but he knows what he needs to do. He's got to find a way to get back on the podium, and he's a defending champion. He has the skills to do it, and Yamaha has certainly proven in the past that they can be successful at this track. So I expect a strong comeback performance to keep this title fight going. Fabio in third. In second, this is a tough one. I'm going to go Jack Miller. Home track, tons of momentum, the possibility of maybe some sketchy weather in the middle of the weekend, although I think that's over now. This is the perfect scenario for Jack to score a big-time finish in front of all of his fans. And as much of a team player as Jack Miller is, if it comes down to he and Pecco Bagnaia, and Jack gets a chance to go for the win with a clean pass at home in Australia, he's going to take it. Definitely. There's no question in my mind that he would be as nice as he could possibly be to Pecco or any other teammate he has in a championship battle in any other country at any other racetrack. Here, now, in his current situation, he's going to take that win if he can possibly get it. But I'm still only picking him second. But who do I have him finishing second to? I think it very well could be Pecco Bagnaia. I know he doesn't have the history here, but he has so much confidence right now. Ducati as a whole is on top of their game, and he knows what's on the line. So Pecco is going to make a serious push for the front, and if the pressure doesn't get to him, I like Pecco as a favorite. So those are my top five for the Australian GP. Aleix Espargaró in fifth, Marc Marquez fourth, and on the podium, Fabio Quartararo, Jack Miller, and your winner, Pecco Bagnaia. And I know I'm kind of playing the line of the biggest riders, both in the championship and in general, but that's because a lot of these guys that have been surprises earlier in the season haven't had an opportunity to go through a MotoGP weekend at this track. So there could be a surprise in there that I'm missing out on, but I think to get the picks closest to where they potentially will be, I have to kind of err on the side of experience and the riders that we know are really, really fast right now. Even though Fabio isn't really, really fast right now, but we know he can be really fast right now. But do you agree? Do you disagree with those picks? You know what to do. Let me know about it on Facebook and Reddit. Tell me why my picks are complete and utter garbage and why yours are way, way better. And tell everybody who you think is going to win the race. Next up, of course, since we have a race, that means we will have a post-race show. Check back at the conclusion of the weekend where we'll discuss all of the action in Moto 3, Moto 2, and MotoGP, and discuss the impact of this weekend on the MotoGP Championship. I'll also give you my take on the weekend, and then it's going to be your turn. Leave your comments on Facebook and Reddit, and I'll get to them on some sort of bonus show coming up very soon. And on that bonus show, by the way, I kind of have a really big show milestone to announce that actually happened a little over a week ago. I want to say it was like a week and a half ago. And I haven't told anybody about it yet, but on that bonus show that will be dedicated to your comments, I'm also going to reveal what that big show milestone is. That's all I'm going to say right now because I don't want to give anything away. So we'll have that bonus show coming up sometime very, very soon. And then next week, remember, we are also going to be ready to move right on to Sepang as the championship rolls on. So we'll do our full preview of the Malaysian GP as well. Then we get an off week and then the season finale in Valencia. I cannot believe we're all the way to the end of the season. At least we know we have an exciting championship that very likely will go all the way down to the final race. And then don't worry, after the year is over, we'll still have plenty of shows because we've got so much to catch up on. We've got off-season tests. We've got the schedule next year with the sprint races. I mean, there's so many topics that we have to go over that we'll have plenty to talk about in the off-season. And of course, tons and tons of your comments too. So we've got a lot of shows on the way. Post-race show this week. Then we've got Malaysia. We've got a bonus show in there, Valencia. I don't want you to miss a single episode of the program. So if you have not done it yet, I would highly recommend you subscribe to the show. Where can you do that? It's easy. On Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spreaker, Stitcher, Player.fm, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible Podcasts. Basically, go to your favorite podcasting site, type in MotoWeek. You should be able to find the program. If you can't, for some strange reason, just head to the website. You can find all of the latest episodes whenever you want at MotoWeek.net. You can follow on Twitter at MotoWeek and on Instagram at MotoWeekUSA. And definitely, definitely, definitely leave your comments, especially after this race, because who knows what the championship is going to look like, and I have to know what you think about it. So leave your comments on Facebook at facebook.com/MotoWeek.net or over on the Reddit sub at r/MotoWeek, where we have the best group of motorcycle fans ever, and we would like you to be part of it. So subscribe to the forum when you're over there. And then if you want to support the program, don't feel obligated, but you can do that on Patreon at patreon.com/MotoWeek. And you can find everything I just talked about whenever you need to at the website. There are links to everything at MotoWeek.net. So until we talk again, just a couple of days from now, I want to thank you so much for listening. Let's see what happens in Phillip Island. Like I said, this could be the deciding race of the championship. Who's going to step up? Is it going to be Pecco? Is it going to be Fabio? Is it going to be Aleix? Or none of the above? Oh, well, no, in a matter of days, and we will certainly have plenty to talk about, and I can't wait to find out your thoughts on it. So it's going to be a wild one. Let's see how it goes. So thank you so much for listening. Ride safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.